Christian, you might have actually had it right when you said that this is the witness of the ancient world instead of the word. Because there's a glimpse of the ancient world in here that is startling to me, and I imagine it will be to you as well. The ancient world was a place not unlike our own, with very clear boundaries. And even more so than for us today, a person like Jesus was very centered in his own race. We call it tribalism. We had a little bit of conversation about this in Sunday school today, about the sort of tribal nature that runs deep in all of us. It's my people, my tribe, my country, right or wrong. These are the boundaries. And for Jesus, they were very clear. I am Jewish. I'm a man. There are certain things that others should respect about my space, and this woman comes into his private space, and it's very upsetting to him. And then we see how he reacts. And so I want to take us through this kind of slowly and think, if you've ever wondered how human is Jesus, today's scripture gives you a pretty good answer. He was really human. He was so human, you might look at this story and think he's racist or sexist or narrow-minded. He's so human in this story, you might use the word petty to describe him. And yet, something divine happens before the whole thing is over. So it's very instructive to us. It is a witness of the ancient world. And for some reason, it's captured in the gospel, so it's also a witness of the ancient word. They could have easily left it out. If I were editing the Bible, I probably would have left this little picture of Jesus out. It's embarrassing to see Jesus act in such a way. And I was interested today in exploring the themes of this book. In particular, I wanted to embrace that word radical, which is why we sang that opening song, was a way of sort of unpacking that word radical. It is a little bit of an in-your-face kind of word. It has lots of connotations, especially after 9/11. In a post-9/11 world, the word radical can sometimes be other than good news. Radical religious people are the ones that fly planes into buildings. So I totally understand the hesitation to use the word radical to describe anything. And why would you use it to mess up a word like welcome, which is, you know, really what we're about? But the word radical is about getting to the root. I've said this before. It's the root word, pun intended, for radical is the same root word for radish, which literally is a root. So to be radical about something is to be really almost obsessed with the root of the problem. So if you're a radical liberal, you really want to get to the roots and you want to dig it up and change it. And if you're a radical conservative, you want to get to the roots and protect it and keep it exactly the way it is. That's one way of sort of looking at that word, why it can be applied all over the spectrum, right? It doesn't just mean you're a leftist or a right-wing nutbag. It may depend what religion you're radical with. It may be, you know, if you're radical about love, then as Jesus was, the rebel-rousing radical man, then you're going to upset people. You're going to rub people the wrong way. And I don't know that that's really the intent of this book, is to get us all to be people who rub people the wrong way, but the intent is for us to sort of sink down and get in touch with our roots, right? The radish from which we grow. And what are our roots? Are our roots about love, compassion, mercy, forgiveness, right? Or are they about judging and drawing boundaries and making rules and being right and knowing who's wrong, right? It's a very different sort of root structure. And I think the root structure of this church, the Christian church in general, and this church in particular, are about welcome. And she does a really nice thing in here, which is what I wanted to look at this, and then look at this story. where she talks about the four acts of an embrace. Remember that? Some of you, we've talked about this before in different settings. But she talks about, and you can physically look at an embrace. Someone's coming to you and you're going to give them a hug. So you open. That's the first act. The second act is waiting. So you wait for the connection. You may stand somewhere with your arms open. You may be waiting a long time, right? Have you ever waited for a hug from someone who's not ready to hug you yet? But this is a reason that we see pictures of Jesus like this a lot, and why the cross, this might bring to mind an image of the cross, arms wide open. This is the hardest part sometimes, and we don't know how long the waiting is going to happen. And then there's the closing, the embrace itself, the connection, the enveloping, the sharing, the being connected. You know, when you hug somebody, you're like heart to heart. That's a significant connection. And if it's me hugging a Muslim or me hugging one of you, you know, that may feel different, but it's really profound, the connection, to know that we're heart to heart. And it's a good way for me to remember who I am. And then the fourth act is the opening of the arms again, right? You don't stay like that. That would be awkward, wouldn't it? Well, let's just go through our day like this. Awkward. So there's always the letting go. And so we've connected. We've been heart to heart. We've remembered who we are. Maybe I learned a little bit about myself. I've learned that I'm more comfortable with this or less comfortable with that. Or, you know. And then we let go, and we've been impacted by one another and by the embrace. So those are the four acts of an embrace. Let's look at this story of Jesus and see, as it stands a witness of the ancient world, where is the embrace? It starts and he entered a house and he didn't want anybody to know he was there. What does that tell you about his state of embrace? He's tired. Huh? Yes. Please stay away. I don't, you know, and that's probably why this is in the gospel, is to give us a full picture of who Jesus is. And Jesus is not always standing around like this. Sometimes he's like this, or this, or this. You know, I've had enough. And there's an element of self-preservation here that's totally understandable. We talked about self-compassion last week. Maybe this is a moment of self-compassion. I need to disengage from the world. But at any rate, this is not act one of an embrace. He's not saying, I'm open for business. I would love to see you. I don't care if you're male or female, Jew or Greek or Gentile. You know, I'm open. That's not the message that's being broadcast here. And the story tells it very clearly. Yet, but, there's always a but, he could not escape notice. And a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately heard about him, and she came and bowed down at his feet. Okay, I can deal with a visitor. Maybe I can deal with a woman. It's a little inappropriate, depending on the setting in the ancient world, for men and women to be talking in public. They're not in public. They're in someone's house. Okay, that's another issue. But then we get this detail about the woman. Now, the woman was a Gentile. And we made Kristen read this word out loud, which was mean. She could have just said, she's not from around here. Next time, feel free to insert that. She was of Syrophoenician origin. Not from around here, not one of us, not of my tribe, not my people, not God's chosen people, right? The ancient world said it this way, there are boundaries and we are God's chosen people, and Jesus is very ethnocentric in this moment. It's about me, my tribe, my God, my people. why are you bothering me? Basically. But she has a need. And she begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. It's not about her. It's about her daughter. She's a good example. I think Jesus would approve. It's okay. You know, a lot of us, are you asking for you or are you asking for someone else? It's not about me. It's about someone I love. But he said to her, let the children be fed first, for it's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. Did you catch that? He calls the Syrophoenician woman a dog, a female dog. You know the word for that. This is how human Jesus can get, dismissing her as really less than human. Not at the same level of him, not welcome at the same table as him, but go away. But she answered him, sir, even the dogs under the table eat at the children's crumbs. Even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. And then he said to her, for saying that, you may go. The demon has left your daughter. I think he says, here's a crumb. Maybe he says, you're right. Here's a crumb. What has actually happened right there? Did Jesus apologize? Did he accept her correction? One of the things that bothers me about this in particular is that he never really elevates her to status of human being, right? He lets her continue in the worldview that she's a dog and he's a person. He has food at his table and he will give the dog a crumb. That's what really upsets me about it. I didn't read it that way 20 years ago. I really thought she was a powerful woman. She stood up to Jesus and he admitted he was wrong and he gave. That's really not what happened. She does stand up to Jesus. She begs, you know, fervently for her daughter, but she still accepts the status of dog. She just says, well, if I'm a dog, at least treat me like a dog and give me a crumb. And so he does. He says, for saying that, you may go. And the demon has left your daughter, by the way. So she went home, found the child lying on the bed, and the demon gone. It occurred to me as I was thinking about this story, I think Jesus had a demon too. And I think the demon left Jesus before it left the daughter. I think the demon that was in Jesus was his, what I call tribal worldview. That it's about me and my people and my God. And somehow she opened his eyes and he widened his embrace in just a moment. he never touches this woman. There are a lot of healing stories. In fact, the one that comes right after it, he's very hands-on and he touches. There's the woman that has the flow of blood and she just reaches out and touches his garment and she's healed. There's no physical contact here. But I think that what happens in this story is actually a miracle because Jesus has opened up a little bit. The demon leaves him. He is moved by the other in his presence. And that's really what's powerful in this teaching story. What happens when we let the other, capital O, she uses that phrase in this book, The Radical Welcome, a lot. And we're left to sort of wonder, well, what is the other, capital O? Is it a woman from another tribe? Is it people with a different worldview? Is it a red state, blue state? Is it a, you know, me versus you? Is it male versus female? Is it gay versus straight? Who is the other? Well, the other is anyone who's other than me, to keep it simple. And when I reach out and I make that embrace and I am heart to heart with someone who is other, then I really, I have the opportunity to be healed and for the demons to leave me. That's the miracle that I find in this story. It's ironic that the very next story, again, is a healing story. Jesus goes on his way. He returns from that region. He's by the Sea of Galilee. And they bring him a deaf mute. And Jesus takes him aside, and he does some stuff with, couldn't remember if this was a spit one or not. He takes mud and dirt and spit, and he puts it in the guy's ears. And this is what he says. There's an Aramaic word here, ephphatha. Be open. Be open. So the hands-on Jesus, dealing with the other, has this very strong message that I think is still the message for us today. Be opened. Be opened. So we are left to wonder, in what ways am I being tribal, small-minded, fully human as I am, but where might I be invited to also be divine, to have the power to let demons leave me and get out of the way of my interactions with other people? In what ways am I closed? And in what ways and what places am I invited to be opened? That's our invitation. It's challenging stuff. But I think in it, we not only see how human Jesus is, but we see how powerful Jesus is. All he does is say the word, your daughter is well. And it happens. And I like to think that Jesus' message to the church will be equally as empowering and liberating and freeing for us when we respond to the embrace of being open.